Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of the Scribnerverse podcast. This is Herb Scribner. I work at the Deseret News, which is a news outlet you can find online at deseret.com. I'm here to talk to you today about the Loki season finale. It gave us answers, and I wanted to talk about where we're going next and what it means for the MCU. What does the finale mean for the show itself, and how was it? That kind of thing. Just do a typical review. So let's kick it off. So, you know, in a lot of ways, the Loki season finale wasn't really a season finale. It was to me, it was a pilot for the next phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, the finale, you know, began, you know, titled For All Time Always. It begins with Loki and Sylvie arriving at the Citadel at the end of time, where they meet the He Who Remains. And from there, they discuss the Timekeepers, the Time Variance Authority, and everything about the show. So that's all you're getting for kind of the easy, quick to know what the show is about before we go into spoilers. So I guess the first question is, was the season finale good? For the most part, yes, it was an awesome season finale. I really enjoyed it. Several questions and ideas throughout the season pay off in the finale. And there's even a cliffhanger that will send you home, kind of in a traditional television style where it answers the questions that have been asked, but at the same time, it leaves you hungry for more and for potentially new stories down the road. I think that, you know, WandaVision and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, if we're talking about Marvel projects, have been kind of like one-offs. They felt that way, where it's kind of like, hey, this is the story. This is all we need to tell you. Boom, done. Loki felt like it was actually leading up to more, and there's a lot more that could come out of it, which I think is a great way for the show to go. I think that because of the way it ended and the way it wraps up the entire season, there's, you know, this show, it's worthy to stand on its own as a Loki show, but it does feel like it'll get better with age as we see what comes next in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We'll be able to see, you know, what comes next and how that affects it. And I think in a couple years, we'll be kind of pointing to Loki as like the catalyst for whatever happens next. My biggest issue with the finale, and this is more of a personal thing, I don't think this will kind of impact a lot of people, but for me, the biggest issue was actually the opening moments. You know, usually, you know, Loki, it starts with that Marvel introduction video, the classic, you know, dun, 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 you know, the theme song that starts before every show, every episode, every movie. For the most part, a couple variations, and this one took a turn and did like a variation of that. You heard some characters from Marvel's past being like their quotes being read, and to me that was not what I wanted in a finale. I kind of like the traditional style so that it hypes you up kind of in the same way that the normal episodes do. Same thing could be for the opening theme song. You know, normally we see the Loki, the different versions of the word Loki, and then we hear like the intro music. That was also different, and to me, I like to hear kind of the more traditional style because it tells me we're getting this one last time. This is the finale. You know, here's this theme song and the opening for the final time. That's one critique that I have. You know, I've always enjoyed that with opening and ending episodes where it's kind of the traditional style. Now you can reflect and be like, okay, this is the last time I will hear this. And it's so that's a personal critique. I don't think it's a big deal. It did set the stage for being a little more fun and epic. It did show that this is going to take a different tone than a traditional episode, but just a little off-putting for me. And, you know, I wish they had gone a different direction with that. Another thing that I've seen kind of pop up on social media a little bit more recently was the vulnerability of Loki. So if this Loki is from 2012, it means he's the Loki we meet in the Avengers. And that Loki was pretty hardcore, pretty gritty, grew up on Asgard, has a lot of fighting skill. And, you know, he's a tough dude, you know, even though he's like lesser than Thor, you know, he still has a pretty powerful fighting style. He can pull off a lot of tricks. He's very cerebral and manipulative in his attacks. To me, this episode really showed the vulnerability of him and showed that he's kind of weaker than that version of Loki. So that's been an interesting discussion online, and it's kind of an interesting discussion I took into this episode. You know, yeah, he has a lot of skill and strength, and you know, he's wise in a lot of ways, but he just seemed a little weak. And it reminded me of the way that like the Joker is portrayed. Like the Joker has always been portrayed as this kind of weaker to Batman villain who's not as strong as Batman. So he often gets like attacked in a lot of ways, and he just doesn't have the same fighting skills. So he's kind of like a planner rather than like a fighter. And I feel like we've seen a better version of Loki in the Marvel projects, and that came through in this episode as well. He wasn't as strong of a fighter as like we normally see, and even his mind wasn't as sharp as we've seen in the past. So I think that might have been kind of his connection to Sylvie and how that's affected him, that's made him kind of weaker in that regard. But that's just a thought on that. And speaking of that, you know, fans of action-filled shows, I don't think we'll enjoy this episode. Like, if you liked a lot of the Falcon Winter Soldier action, I don't think you'll necessarily love this episode because it's focused on a lot of philosophical discussion. It focuses more on the mysteries and actually gives the answers. And I think that anyone who's a fan of action, wants to see battles, wants to see, like, cosmic energy used and all that, not going to be a fan of this. That said, I think there are a lot of, you know, a show like Loki is going to have a lot of mysteries layered on top of mysteries. Questions on top of questions, desire for answers. Like, it's going to be all about, can we answer these questions directly? And I think Loki did a really good job of actually, like, sitting us down and being like, hey, here are the answers. Here's what this has all been leading toward. This is what this all means for you. And, you know, it reminded me a lot of the ways, you know, I've been rewatching Lost a little bit recently, and it just reminded me of the way there were all these questions asked continually again and again and again. We got questions, 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 and we knew the answers would come eventually. What I liked about, you know, and a lot of times the answers reveal new questions, and then it was like, but then it was still like a question on top of a question. You know, if we're talking about Lost, you know, what's in the hatch, right? That got answered with, oh, Desmond's in the hatch. And then it's like, oh, wait, who's Desmond, right? So, and then we never, and then it was like, what is his purpose there? And then, like, it just expanded. Whereas, like, Loki, what I thought was interesting was they just answered the questions. They said, like, here's the TVA. Here's what the TVA is. And then it's like, you know, kind of answered those questions. And then, like, but then still provided, you know, an answer that led to more questions, but in a way that said, like, okay, don't worry about those questions anymore. Here are the new questions, and reset the game, reset the chessboard. And I think it did in a way that was actually good for charting a new future. And I think that that's kind of the conflict that a lot of people are talking about right now, is that it wasn't like, it was just so many answers, so much dialogue. And I personally will embrace a show that dove right into the mysteries and the fun and the excitement and the answers. You know, I actually think that this show in a lot of ways actually embraced the fun in a way that other shows wouldn't. I think that, you know, a lot of times Marvel fans get really, really into the theories, really start, you know, diving deep into what makes, you know, the show tick, like who's behind the TVA, who's leading Judge Renslayer, who's attacking Loki. And I think for the first time in these Marvel shows, they actually give us answers that we were kind of like not only expecting, but kind of did it in a way that we weren't expecting. You know, I think with WandaVision, we were kind of planning for something bigger, with, you know, who was behind everything. And they did provide an answer that was kind of like fitting for the show, but it still felt like a letdown to what fans were thinking. And then even, you know, leaving some mysteries unsolved, like the aerospace engineer. And then with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you know, I think there was some kind of hesitation for fans to dive too deep into it. And that's why some of the answers that were revealed there weren't as like great as we'd anticipate, because we weren't anticipating anything great. With Loki, they actually, you know, gave us the avenues for us to travel down and say, hey, this is a potential answer. If you follow the Easter eggs, this is the answer. And then there's another path that's like, well, actually, it could be a lot more simple. And I think it was fun that they actually kind of embraced the Easter egg angle and said, and now that we have these three Marvel shows, you know, there's one show with WandaVision that says, hey, here are the Easter eggs, but actually we're going to zag. And then with WandaVision Falcon and Winter Soldier, it's, hey, here's the likely answer. And guess what? It's probably going to be that. And kind of simple, plain stated. And then with Loki, it's kind of like, hey, here's an Easter egg answer. Here's a likely answer. And then, hey, here's the Easter egg answer. And like, we're going to fully dive into it. And I just love that they went for it. And they kind of went into something that Marvel comic book fans would understand, but maybe the general viewer wouldn't. And you could argue the general viewer is a Marvel fan, so maybe that's okay. But, you know, it'd be interesting, like, fans who haven't really embraced Marvel too much, how they would have taken in that finale. And it kind of speaks to the whole idea of, like, well, how much of the Marvel universe do you have to see before Loki? And so, anyway, I'm very impressed that they went that route. I'm actually happy they went that route. It just, you know, I think a lot of times with shows and finales, we're kind of always, like, oh man, wouldn't it be crazy if they went this way? And the fact that they actually went that way is actually pretty satisfying. And I love that, you know, the Loki finale ended or started with kind of what we expected the end to be. So the fact that they even just like led off with that kind of stuff was a great way to start the episode and then just give us all they had. And I just love it. And, you know, so it's just a great way to end. And so, yeah, the finale of Loki is a cerebral experience. You know, it's really just opening the conversation for what's going to move forward. It's going to reshape, you know, the discussion for the MCU moving forward. And just there's so much more to dissect here as we move forward. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. But I just wanted to say it was a tremendous episode. The visuals were great. The acting was just on par. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say it was a worse episode than any of the others. You know, I've been fairly impressed with Loki. I know some haven't loved some of the choices they've made. I don't really have an opinion on the Loki-Sylvie relationship aspect. I think that I could see both sides of that, that I think it was kind of forced and kind of expected. But at the same time, you know, I also don't think Marvel has done a particularly good job of handling romances. And so I think this was actually one that felt earned, because we saw a lot of scenes where they were kind of like flirting and kind of like, you know, a budding relationship. And so I actually think they pulled it off, but I could see why fans think it's also a little weird, because if Loki and Sylvie have this weird, you know, love interest with each other, I mean, like, you know, Sylvie's technically a Loki and Loki's technically a Sylvie. So that kind of gets into some weird territory. You know, because essentially Loki loves himself and, you know, Sylvie loves herself. And so that's kind of an interesting angle that they could explore. But anyway, all I'll say is like that's one of the flaws that I could see like some fans not loving about this episode. And like I said, I think some of the Loki aspects where he's not as strong as he used to be, that's also an aspect that I could see a lot of fans having an issue with. But for the most part, the finale is, if you've liked Loki up to this point, I think you'll like the finale. If you're okay with like the philosophical, the mystery elements, I think you'll be okay with this. And I think like if you haven't watched Loki and you went into the next phase of Marvel having not seen Loki, you're gonna have a tough time. And that I think is the importance of Loki, and I think that's why, you know, Disney Plus really went all in on this show, is that it's kind of to say, hey, you're going to need to know this stuff. And I could see an angle moving forward where we actually, and I know we'll talk about this later, but I could also see an angle in the future where you do see, like, let's say you were a traditionalist, you only saw the Marvel movies. There could be a world in which, like, you don't need to see Loki, but it's going to really enhance your viewing in a really deep way, in the same way that seeing a previous Marvel movie would enhance your viewing of a next Marvel movie. You know, in a lot of ways, this show could be a prequel for a future Marvel movie. We'll talk about later which movie that is. But anyway, I think for fans who watch this, it's going to pay off huge in the future. And I think there will be a lot of people who, if they haven't seen this show, but see the Marvel movies, you know, it'll be like, you got to watch Loki to understand, or Loki will really help you understand this. And I think Loki will really age well in terms of its content and in terms of what's in it and in terms of what it tells us. So, you know, shout out to Marvel. You know, the fact that they can do so many projects at the same time and still deliver is a great feeling. You know, I think we've gotten a nice balance of cosmic and alternate realities and multiverses, and with a good balance of the traditional style of, you know, action and superhero films. I was actually rewatching The Falcon and the Winter Soldier last night, and it kind of made me a little interested in like thinking about how there are two levels of the Marvel universe right now and how one will affect the other. So anyway, I'm really excited about what's coming next. The finale really is episode one of what's coming next in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I'm going to take a break here. We're going to go into spoilers for the finale in the next section. So hang around. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening so far. If you haven't watched the episode, go watch it before you listen to the next section. But thanks again, and we'll dive into the finale next. So we'll be back after this break. All right, welcome back. We are back here for the Loki season one finale and what it means for the MCU. Again, this part will have spoilers for the finale, so please go watch the episode if you haven't listened, or if you've been listening and you didn't, you know, leave after the break. Yeah, please go watch the episode before you listen to this section, because I want to dive into some spoilers here. So this episode is really the beginning of what's next in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The same can be said for, like, kind of the post-credits of Black Widow, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, WandaVision. Each of these, you know, new projects that have come out is setting the stage, and they're all coming out in this new phase of Marvel, so you could argue that we're already in the new phase. But for me, like, Loki was really the beginning of that new phase and really showing us, like, what's to come. I think it reminds me of, like, the Iron Man 2 thing where, you know, Iron Man was obviously the beginning of this Marvel phase and this Marvel era and this Marvel saga, right? It began the Infinity Saga. Whereas, you know, Iron Man 2, I think, really told us, like, what the real path was for, like, the Avengers and, like, how the Avengers were going to get together. And so I think, like, Loki's in that Iron Man 2 situation where it's, you know, like, WandaVision obviously kicked things off, Falcon and the Winter Soldier kicks things off, Black Widow kicks things off. But Loki's saying, like, okay, we've kicked things off enough. Now, here's where we're going. And here's where the next saga is really going. And kind of embracing the things we've been wondering about with the multiverse and questions about that. I think the finale specifically was episode one of that. And I think if you just watched episode one of this and then you saw the rest of things coming, you would definitely have an understanding. You know, because we've heard for years that Marvel would be embracing the multiverse. You know, we heard hints of it in Spider-Man and Far From Home. There were questions of it after Avengers Endgame with the different timelines and everything. And now we're actually seeing it with this finale and especially with hints of What's It or What If, the Marvel animated series that embraces the multiverse as well. So we've always heard, like, rumblings of it, and now we're actually getting, like, oh yeah, here's why it's like that. Here's what the multiverse is. Here's how it was created, blah, blah, blah. You know, introducing, you know, He Who Remains and that whole aspect, which we'll get into in a minute. I think that's really important. In a way, we can't really even talk about what's coming next because we're already here. Like, we're here. We're in the next saga, and we're in the next multiverse aspect of the show and the cinematic universe. You know, and in a way, the way that ended, so just to kind of recap, so Sylvie and Loki basically get the choice. Hey, you can either, they meet He Who Remains, who is played by Jonathan Majors, who is going to be playing Kang the Conqueror in the next Ant-Man movie. So essentially this is Kang the Conqueror, who's been, like, kind of conquering timelines in the Marvel Comics. And in this show, he's He Who Remains, who in the Marvel Comics was actually an older guy, but so clearly they zagged there. And he's basically saying, hey, I'm He Who Remains. I've been in charge of the timeline, the sacred timeline. I've kept the other timelines from branching because I don't want variants of myself to come and take over the sacred timeline and cause a multiversal war. Kind of a smart reasoning, I would say. You know, you don't want an evil, you know, tyrant taking over all the timelines and all that. And so, yeah, so Loki and Sylvie are basically given the choice. You could kill He Who Remains and let the timelines branch out, let free will be, and then, yeah, an evil version of He Who Remains will come and take on the multiverse, and there'll be another multiversal war, and it'll be a whole problem. Or they could just take over his role and just lead the TVA and lead the timekeepers and just be basically him. And so there's some confliction there. Eventually, as we could expect, Sylvie kind of turns her back on Loki, and Loki turns back on Sylvie, and basically Sylvie wins the day, kills He Who Remains, and la-da, multiverse begins. So, and He Who Remains says, I'll be seeing you soon, which is obviously an indication he will be back in some form. This probably hints at Kang the Conqueror being a big villain for the upcoming phase of Marvel movies. Whether or not he's the Loki of this saga, meaning he's, like, the first villain before the next villain, or if he's just the next big villain, is remains to be seen. But we could see him popping up in multiple movies, I could see, especially if there's variants moving around. And I thought that introduction was great. I thought that there's been a lot of hints that Kang the Conqueror would be the next villain, so the fact that he is kind of the next villain from what we could see here, I think is a great move, And it really gives us an interesting aspect, you know, because before we were all hyped for Thanos, right? Every episode was leading towards Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet. And now that we have Kang the Conqueror, essentially, who could pop up in any movie, anytime, that's pretty interesting to see where this is going. So yeah, the multiverse gets created, and this does a lot of things. It actually makes all the, in theory, it would make all the old Marvel movies canon. Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man movies are now canon. The X-Men, Deadpool, Fantastic Four, all properties that were of 21st Century Studios that are now owned by Disney, technically could be canon now and just happen in a different universe, which means that if they were introduced into this timeline, the original timeline, then that would mean that they're like part of the cinematic universe. And so in a way, any Marvel project you watch is technically now part of the canon, which I think is a very smart way to kind of like include all of it. Of course, it's not a part of the main MCU, as we know, but it's still like canon in a way because it technically happened in another universe. I think that was really smart. Another thing it raised for me was that it kind of means that anyone could come back. If it's all different universes, that means like Tony Stark, Steve Rogers, Loki, Thanos. They've all died in the past, right? But they could all come back. You know, that's what that means. It essentially means that like in another timeline, Thanos existed and rode a helicopter. So it means he could come back. So do I think we'll see like an Iron Man, Tony Stark in another movie? No. Do I think we could see Captain America? Maybe. Do I think we could see Loki? I mean, we'll definitely see Loki, but could we see, you know, basically any of the heroes who have died? Of course. You know, that's kind of the beauty of this. Will they be played by different actors? That's also possible too, because as we know, you know, there are different variants of these, actors and characters. And so theoretically, you know, we've seen different actors play Loki in Loki. So there could be a chance that someone else will play Tony Stark in the future. And I think that was kind of a clever way, because I think, not to say Marvel will run out of heroes, but I know that like there are certain heroes that are more popular than others. And actually this gives us kind of a way for them to recast characters if like actors leave, but they have plans for the heroes. You know, if like, you know, Tom Holland wanted to stay away from Spider-Man, they could easily recast Spider-Man. If they wanted to recast Iron Man, they could easily recast Iron Man. That could be why certain voice actors returned for What's If. And so it actually gives them a lot more flexibility and a lot more, you know, reasons that, you know, for, you know, we know that Terrence Howard was originally, you know, War Machine in Iron Man, and then it became Don Cheadle. Now we kind of know kind of how that could theoretically play out in future Marvel movies. So I think it was a great idea to do it. It's not going to please everyone, though, and sometimes that means it'll cheapen the death on screen. So, like, yeah, if Tony Stark came back, was a different actor, how are you supposed to feel about Robert Downey Jr.'s version of Tony Stark dying? And there's some weird questions that come along with that. You know, if there's a new Tony Stark that shows up, like, what does that mean for the original Tony Stark, and how does that play out? You know, as we get down the timeline, future movies, how does that play out to the originals? And then if a character dies, does that mean they're always dead? And, you know, I think that, you know, there have been a lot of projects over the years, you know, that if anyone can come back, then does that limit the interest of the death scenes? And, you know, so that's why, like, I think they got to be careful in how they choose to do this, you know. You know, the way they brought back Loki into the Marvel Cinematic Universe was smart, right? They went back in time, they had the Tesseract, he took it and left, smart way. But if, you know, in Iron Man, you know, Tony Stark was to come back, and it was a different actor just out of nowhere, you know, they got to play it smart and play it right. And so I think, you know, that's going to be an important move as we move forward, just kind of managing that and seeing what happens. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the big takeaway for me is that, like, you know, this opens a lot of possibilities for the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the timeline. I think they got to be careful in how they use it. And I think they got to just, you know, be procedural and a little methodical about how they introduce characters and whatnot. Another thing I want to just bring up is that the beauty of the fact that we don't really have to wait long for answers. So in a traditional TV show, you would watch it and you would kind of see the finale and you'd be like, oh my, what? And then you'd have to wait a year to really see what happened. And sometimes you'd have to wait to make sure that the show got picked up again to even like get the answers that you wanted. Now, are we going to learn the answers to like Loki's, being in the TVA, you know, as we saw, he got transferred back to the TVA. He shows up. Mobius and Hunter B-15 have no idea who he is. And that just shows that there's a new timeline of the TVA extending. And so now he's going to have to deal with that. And we clearly know there's going to be a season two after the mid-credit scenes revealed that there's going to be a season two. So all that said, we don't know what's going to happen with Loki probably for a little bit. But as far as what this means for the universe, we'll probably find out pretty soon. I mean, we're going to get What If next month, which is going to tell alternate timeline versions of different stories, which is basically saying, hey, here are multiverse versions of what happened. You know, if we see Tony Stark and Killmonger working together, that means that happened in another timeline. And it's just giving us some like fun stories from different timelines that and that kind of links into the Loki stuff. So I think that's kind of a cool, clever way they're doing that. It'll be fun to see that. I'm excited for that show. And that'll give us a little bit of answers. But then even more importantly, we'll probably get some answers to this in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, which comes out next year. That's where we'll probably get the main source of like what these multiverse timelines mean. What does it mean that there's a multiverse war? Will Doctor Strange be in charge of that? Is that the Infinity War kind of thing? Like, are they building towards that being the huge battle? Or are we just kind of like, is that going to be solved in Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness? So that's where we'll probably get the best answers for this. But then we'll also get answers in Ant-Man and the Wasp and Quantumania, which is the third Ant-Man movie, which we know Majors will star in and He Who Remains will be a character in. So again, a lot of answers are coming and we're going to get those answers down the road. And we won't have to wait for Loki season two. We'll get a lot of the answers in the upcoming projects. And so I love that Marvel's doing that. I love that the TV shows are feeding into the movies and the movies can feed into the TV shows. And it's all kind of connected. And I just love that we're getting those answers sooner. We won't have to wait too long for that. And yeah, Loki. So yeah, at the end of the day, you know, Loki really just opened the door for, you know, the new possibilities. You know, I think opening up the multiverse is obviously kind of the big question for a lot of people, and that's gonna raise questions about, you know, I think there could be a lot of people who are like, well, that's gonna cheapen a lot of things. That means that nothing's sacred on the show, and that means that anything can happen. Which, you know, some people like, some people don't. But you know, it now gives us all a focus for this. I think that's one thing that Marvel learned from their first saga, the Infinity Saga, is that once the Infinity Gauntlet was kind of presented and everyone was wondering like how it's going to feed into that and the Infinity Stones and how that all features into Thanos, that was like kind of the direction. And now we have a direction. We have a direction officially. The multiverse is here. There are multiple timelines. There are evil villains from other timelines who could come into this timeline. And now the heroes are probably going to have to put it back in order, put everything back together. The evil version of He Who Remains seems like he's the first villain. And again, I don't know if this means that that's the first Loki-style villain. If you remember, the first phase of Marvel, phase one of the Infinity Saga, which was phases 1 through 3, the first phase was really Loki as the villain, and then Thanos kind of took over and became more of the villain. And, you know, as we saw in the Avengers movies, you know, Loki was the villain in the first one, second one it was Ultron, and the third one was Thanos, and the fourth one was Thanos. So is this, you know, is phase four, if we follow that timeline, the next saga will be like phases 4, 5, and 6. So does that mean like He Who Remains will be the villain of phase 4, someone else come in phase 5, and then someone else come in phase 6? Or does that mean that He Who Remains will be the villain throughout these phases and pop up in different ways? If he's the villain of Loki, you know, revealed as the villain of Loki, and then we know he'll pop up in Quantumania, because we have that confirmed that, you know, Jonathan Majors will star in that movie. Does that mean he'll pop up in Doctor Strange? Does that mean he'll pop up in a Avengers movie down the road? You know, that's kind of the interesting question that we're left with. I think these are questions that we weren't left with before. I think we were left with, you know, with WandaVision, we were left with the question like, okay, is Scarlet Witch going to impact Doctor Strange and the multiverse? You know, at the end of Falcon and Winter Soldier, we're wondering, will the Power Broker play into like future movies? And now we kind of have like a bigger bad. I don't want to call him the big bad because I don't know if he's going to factor into those movies down the road, but we have a bigger bad to consider. And, you know, I would argue that I don't think the setup in Loki is just for Ant-Man and the Wasp. I think it's Loki is setting up Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is and Doctor Strange, which are going to set up future Avengers movie down the road. And so, yeah, so that's kind of my thing there. I just think it'll be great to see where they go forward. Again, there are a lot of, like, this is also the thing with Marvel, is that they've done a pretty good job of keeping fans around and keeping things stable and having a plan. And now that you get into this timeline thing and time travel, that's where things can fall apart. Like I was mentioning Lost earlier, you know, the time travel aspects of that kind of ruin things. It's like, well, if they could travel back, wouldn't that mean this, this, that? And so you're going to turn off some people, I'm sure, with the time travel and the multiverse. You're going to turn off people who think, like, wait, there's multiple timelines. Like, how do I keep track of that? And so now I do trust Marvel in that way. I do think they're very smart and strategic in how they implement this. Obviously, they have comic books. They've followed the comic books for years, and they can obviously dissect these things, and they've paid off lines from movies 10 years ago and movies 15 years later. So I do trust them to do that, but I just think they're heading into kind of scary territory with all this. So it'll be interesting to see how they perform with that. But we'll see how that goes. So yeah, so those are my Loki thoughts. I wanted to kind of just share them all. I do have a review going up on Deseret.com at some point today. I also have some more spoilery stuff about He Who Remains and the ending scenes and all that explained and kind of the analysis there. I'm going to try and put together a 10 questions that we have to answer moving forward. And I'll just have some more content for you guys to check out on Deseret.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Herb Scribner. And yeah, just let me know what you think. If you're not subscribed to this, you know, I try to put out regular episodes about Marvel and Star Wars content. So please, you know, subscribe, like, whatever you got to do, share with your friends. But otherwise, yeah, just let me know what you think. Let me know what you think of the episode. Let me know what you think of Loki, if you enjoyed it, if you didn't like it. Yeah, keep me updated. But thanks to everyone for listening to this. I hope I kept your interest for a little bit. And if not, that's okay too. But anyway, thanks for listening. Again, subscribe, like, do what you got to do. And we will be back again with a new episode at some point in the future about Marvel or Star Wars content. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.